Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tapper Brothers. And we're broadcasting this week from the Center for a More Utopian. Is it proper to say more utopian?
Is it like utopian more, is
more
perfect.
Like more perfect.
It'd be more perfect. Right. Yeah.
Well, more utopian society here at Car Talk.
Maybe it's
Plaza.
More. Sir Thomas More, utopian society.
Anyway, here's an idea that has been proposed to us by a listener named Eric Schaefer. We would add that he sent it by email, so he might not be proposing it. He might be stealing the idea from someone else. How would we know? Why would we care?
Why would we care? It doesn't matter. You can steal everything.
Here's Eric's idea. Go ahead.
Here it is, and it knocks your socks off when you hear it. Stupid people should have to wear a sign that says, "I'm stupid." That way you wouldn't rely on them, would you? I mean, you wouldn't ask them anything. It would be like, "Excuse me. Oops, never mind. I didn't see your sign." It's like before my wife and I moved from Texas to California, our house was full of boxes, and there was a U-Haul truck in our driveway. My neighbor comes over and says, "Hey, moving?" No, we just pack up our stuff once or twice a week, see how many boxes it takes, and then we put it back in the house. Here's your sign. I'm stupid. A couple of months ago, I went fishing with a buddy of mine. We pulled his boat into the dock. I lifted up this big old stringer of bass, and the idiot on the dock says, "Hey, y'all catch them fish?" "No, I talked them into giving up. Here's your sign." Last time I had a flat tire, I pulled into one of those side-of-the-road gas stations. The attendant walks out, looks at my truck, looks at me, and says, "Tire go flat?" I couldn't resist. I said, "Nope. I was driving around, and the other three just swelled up. I don't know what happened. Here's your sign." I'm stupid. It's so simple.
Yeah.
Well, I would, however, have to wear one.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah.
I mean, and how would you select people? Would they have to be, like, nominated, or it's just a self-selection
thing? No, I think everyone's given a supply of signs.
And you just hang them on people.
Just like Eric. And you hand them out, and if someone hands you one, you got to wear it for at least a month.
Yeah, I mean, if someone hands you one, it obviously means you need it.
Right.
It might
be just temporary, fleeting stupidity.
It might be, but usually it isn't, is it?
No. No, not usually.
It usually lasts a lifetime, doesn't it?
Well, in your case,
in my case, it has.
Anyway, if you have any life-altering ideas that you want to share with us, or you just want to talk to us about your car or anything else, our number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 8-882-2-782-55. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Ben from Northwood, New Hampshire.
Ben!
Hey, have you got a car problem? Here, where's my sign? Where'd you say you're from?
Northwood, New Hampshire.
Northwood.
That sounds like it's way, way up in the Northwoods.
It's actually not that far north at all.
Oh.
It's kind of towards mid-New Hampshire, around Concord and Portsmouth.
Oh.
Oh,
did they give a sign to the guy who named this one?
Yeah, okay.
All right, we're ready. So
what's up, Ben, baby?
Well, it's kind of an argument that I'm having with my girlfriend.
Should never argue with your girlfriend.
I know, but I can't let this one go. It's
You can't, huh?
Well, it's right. About, I have a 1979 Rabbit diesel. Because of these cold mornings that we have in New Hampshire, I'm forced to plug my car in, so it's easier to start in the morning.
Right.
And then I start up, let the heat take about an hour to warm the car up.
So you just let the thing idle in the driveway?
Yeah.
And while you're shaving or having breakfast or whatever you do in the morning?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, because of the new wind chill factor, my girlfriend thinks that I need to start my car up earlier because she believes the car is aware of the wind chill factor. And I'm not buying this at all.
Mm-hmm.
I just need your help. Please tell me that the car does not know what wind chill factor is, because that would terrify me.
Well, it depends on whether or not your car has feelings.
Yeah, VWs, they don't have feelings because they're made in Germany. Fiats, on the other hand, are very sensitive.
Very emotional.
Very sensitive to wind chill factor. Fiats, Alfa Romeos, stuff like that. Any car made in Mexico, for example, would be susceptible to wind chill effects.
I see. Yeah.
But, you know, those Teutonic countries like Germany.
Sweden, too.
Well, the Swedes, I'm not so sure. I don't know about that. But Germany, no. Not that I'm prejudiced.
They're tough.
Not that I'm prejudiced. Well, I mean, how are we going to handle this, Ben?
Delicately. I mean, you don't want to offend your girlfriend. On the other hand, you could give her a sign.
I could give her a sign. She could give me the boot.
Yeah, I mean, of course you're right, because wind chill is specifically how does it feel? So that when it's 0 degrees and the wind is blowing at 40 miles an hour, it feels like it's minus 30 degrees, not the real temperature of zero.
Right. If only because the cold air can penetrate your Bronco Nagurski long underwear more readily when it's blowing at 30 miles an hour than when there's no wind.
And that does have a very minor effect on the car. And that minor effect is this. If you park the car, everything is going to cool off much faster. So you stop the engine, and everything in there is hundreds of degrees. For example, just the coolant is 250 degrees or something. And within a very short time, it's going to be zero if the temperature outside is zero. And that short time is going to be shorter if the wind is blowing. But once it gets to zero, the wind can keep blowing, and it ain't going to get any colder for the car.
Wonderful.
So now the question is, are you going to tell her this and make her feel stupid?
Well, that is a...
That's always a problem, isn't it? I mean, we people who are so much smarter than everybody else, we have the problem of wanting to tell them. And when we do, we don't make any friends.
No.
Right? And so, I mean, I've learned. I mean, trust me, I've suffered this through my entire life.
Oh, he has. He has to tie a pork chop around his neck to get the dog to play with him.
I mean, I got a brother who's just between you and me, Ben. He's a couple of sandwiches short of a whole picnic.
Oh, we have another brother? I didn't even know.
Here's your son. I don't know what to do, Ben. I mean, you can just basically kiss this girlfriend goodbye, literally, if you want to tell her this.
I might suggest that it would be helpful for a third party to introduce the correct answer to this.
Ooh.
While you even, in fact, try to support her position, and you say, oh, geez, yeah, I guess you are right. I guess wind chill doesn't really affect internal combustion engines.
But get out of my house anyway.
Right. See you, Ben.
And get out of my house. You got it, Ben.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for calling. Ben, you're absolutely right. And get out of my... Yeah, that's about it.
1-888.
So many wives have done that. Oh, never mind.
882. What's the number? 882.
Yeah, good.
278-255. Something like that.
2782. Yeah, that's right.
Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Sonia. I'm calling from Seattle.
With an I or a Y?
With a J.
I knew that.
A J.
Sonia. Like in Sonia Henny's tutu.
Something like that.
Yeah, Sonia. What's your ethnic background?
Ethnic background? Okay, I'm part Puerto Rican, part Norwegian, and part Scottish, as far as I know.
I love it.
Puerto Rican, Norwegian. Isn't that awesome? Wow.
We don't want to ask you how that happened. Somewhere there was a sailor in that group.
Where are you from, Sonia?
Seattle.
Sailor.
Never mind.
Seattle Ocean. That's right.
Okay. Yeah. So what can we do?
And it's right near Norway and Puerto Rico.
Exactly.
So, Sonia, what's up?
Okay. Well, I have an 84 Saab 900 Turbo.
Mm-hmm.
And recently its left axle just broke. I mean, it just started choking and then stopped. And I think its CV joint actually fell onto the ground.
Yeah,
that happened.
That happens.
By the way, before we answer your question, I have to tell you a short little story.
Does it involve a sailor?
No, it involves a Saab. One of our guys at the garage, Howie, who pretty much only works on Japanese cars or extraterrestrial vehicles, happened to be assigned to replace a water pump in fact, it was an 84 Saab 900. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at the thing, and of course, you may not realize it, but the engine in this vehicle is in backwards.
Yeah.
In other words, the front of the crankshaft that runs all of the accessories, like the water pump, the air conditioner, is closest to the driver. And that the business end of the crankshaft, that is the part that ultimately goes into the transmission, is farthest from the driver. And I guess not having worked on Saabs very much, he looks at this thing and he says, They must have come up with this design during those 6 months of darkness in Sweden. And I can just see it now. They put the engine in. Nels! The engine's in backwards.
We can make it work.
We'll have to make the most of it now. Yeah, you betcha.
It is definitely a confusing car.
It is interesting.
I tried to change the air filter, and it took me, you know, probably about an hour and a half just to find it.
Yeah. No.
Well, when the engine's in backwards, then all bets are off.
Yeah, who knows what
can
happen.
The stuff could be any place.
But
anyway, that's the CV joint broke. The axle fell out into the street. You stopped dead, of course.
Right. But I had it towed to the shop, and they fixed it, and I got it back a couple days later. And I noticed a few changes.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed it was a lot easier to shift, but turning the ignition on suddenly became incredibly difficult, like to where it would hurt my finger and stress the key.
Yeah.
And the headlights used to turn on and off with the ignition, but now they just stay on even if I turn them off.
You know, a week or so ago, a woman called us, and she had been to the dealership and complained about some symptom. The dealer basically told her that she was nuts and sent her away, and I got all in a tizzy saying, why do dealers do this? Why do they tell women, and it's mostly women, why do they tell them that they're crazy when something is actually happening?
Oh, they did do that.
And now I know. You're crazy, Sonia. None of this could possibly have happened.
Was the vehicle was towed?
Yeah, it was towed.
Uh-huh.
Oh, does that have something?
Yeah. I think something got disturbed in the towing. I think you may have even something as simple as a broken motor mount, or maybe somehow or another the shift linkage got disturbed.
Oh, I see.
Yeah, and I my vote is for a broken motor mount.
I mean, everything that you've suggested sort of leans toward the engine and transmission somehow getting out of whack. Literally, physically out of whack.
And that's also why the lights won't go off, because you're not turning the key all the way off.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Take it back to them before you break the key off, because then it's going to cost
you
more money.
Oh, then you have to jump the car.
Oh, that's a pain. And you're going to have to use a lot of tact and diplomacy.
And while
it's there,
see if they can turn the engine around and have it face the right way. That's more of most of your problem, I think. See you, Sonia.
Okay, thanks.
Good luck.
Bye.
Bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Vincent in Prospect, Tennessee.
Hi, Vincent. How are you?
Fabulous. But my car isn't.
Yeah? Oh. Why not?
Well, I got this 93 Jeep Wrangler I inherited from my daughter. And
wait a minute. Doesn't inheritance usually go in the other direction?
I know.
It's like I'm sick of driving this thing and you can have it back?
Yeah.
Yep. That's what it is.
Perfect.
Go ahead, Vincent.
Well, when I started this thing up about 2 weeks ago, I got this real loud exhaust noise coming out of the back of the engine. And then when I started to drive it the first 2 to 5 miles, I had to keep the RPMs below 2,000 or it would start to shake. And then after I go 5 miles, it starts to really shake, lose power, and quit. But if I sit there for about 10 to 15 minutes, I can do it all over again. So I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with this thing.
How long since this thing has run before?
It's been sitting for about a year, over a year.
And you don't know what condition it was in when it stopped running?
You know it wasn't good, otherwise you wouldn't have given it up.
Your daughter would have given it to you.
Yeah, if it was running like a dream.
You wouldn't have it.
That's probably right.
And I'm sure she said to you, oh, it's running fine.
What did she get, by the way?
She got a Nissan Altima.
Perfect.
Really?
So let me get this right. You start the thing up, and it runs badly, you say, in that
sort of shaking.
You know, it runs fine until you get up to 2,000 RPM. That's when it starts to shake.
It runs fine, which means that if you take your foot off the gas, it'll idle smoothly.
Yes.
But it won't accelerate.
Not very fast.
Okay, and then it stalls. It won't restart immediately. Is that true?
Right.
How long does it take before you can restart it?
About 10 to 15 minutes.
This is a classic case of an exhaust system restriction.
Ooh.
You've got, now Tennessee is known as raccoon country. You got a raccoon that crawled up the tailpipe.
And he's living in there or he's dying.
No, there ain't nothing living in there anymore. But I would be willing to bet that what's happening is you start the thing up, and until you build up enough, I mean, it isn't completely restricted, but it would explain everything. It'll explain the inability to restart it until the pressure had a chance to equalize and diminish.
Good, good.
And the back pressure would eventually cause the engine to run rough and cut out. And then it won't restart until the pressure has had a chance to, you know, come down to atmospheric pressure. What do you think?
Great. How do I find the restriction?
So you go out to Sears and you buy a Sawzall.
And you cut this whole system in half.
Well, I would divide and conquer.
You divide and conquer. So that way you can look up the front and you can look down the back.
Well, the easiest way to do this, actually, is to disconnect the front exhaust pipe and let it hang.
Okay.
It will be loud as all outdoors. So
man.
don't do it early Sunday morning.
No.
Your neighbors will hate you, but when you drive it, you should be able to drive it as long as you want, and it should have power, and it shouldn't run rough, and it shouldn't misfire, and you'll know then that the blockage is somewhere.
Okay.
The most likely place probably is the catalytic converter. But the next most likely place is the muffler. So
if you're lucky, it's the muffler.
So then you can try to disconnect the muffler and see if it runs okay. And if that's the case, you buy yourself a muffler. But,
right.
You know, you could, if you're going to do this yourself, that's the way to do it. If you took it to a shop, they would probably check the operating temperature of the converter to see if, in fact, it's plugged. But even they might take out the Sawzall. Good luck, Vincent.
Thanks.
All right. See you later, man.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, look, it's time to take a short break.
All right. And when we come back, we'll have the answer to last week's puzzler.
Do you know the answer?
Are you kidding? I didn't even know we had a puzzle.
We'll be back in a minute. Now, baby, that your car won't run, darling, I know that's no fun. Hell, how you gonna come on over and visit me? Could be a water pump, a timing chain, a leaky seal, rusty radiator, or a squeaky wheel, distributor cap or plugs that need to be cleaned. 'Cause I'm your handyman. A handyman. I got the motivation to make it right. Brakes, have no fear, I'll fix it for a six-pack of beer, maybe some little extra on the side. And even though Jennifer Lawrence remembers to thank her radio's off button whenever she hears us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic Car Talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers. And we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler. Here it is. You ready?
Yeah. Of course. Am I ready?
Of course, I'm ready. You don't remember.
I don't remember what it was.
No, I didn't think so. Here it is. I'll do it quickly. Our producer, Dougie Berman, is walking home from work late one afternoon, like 2:15. As he approaches his house, he notices that there's a car parked out front with the engine running. And in the driver's seat is a man. Then he notices someone coming from the direction of his house carrying what looks like a huge pile of rags. The guy opens the back door, throws the rags in the back seat, jumps into the car, and the driver puts the car into gear and they speed away. Got it?
Yeah, yeah.
Set the whole scene. You can just see it, right?
Yeah.
Dougie goes into the house, plays with the dogs, opens the mail, takes a nap, and a few days later, he notices that all his clothes have been stolen. So he calls the police to make a report. The inspector comes down, and Dougie's standing there in his underwear. That's all he's got.
How long did it take him to notice this? A couple of weeks?
No, about 5 days, I think.
5 days. During which time he wasn't at work. Couldn't go to work in his shorts.
No, he sleeps in his clothes and just goes right to work.
Okay. Yeah.
Anyway, he explains what happened. The officer asks him if he noticed anything about the guys, and he says, no, they were average height, average weight, da-da-da-da. And the inspector says, thanks a lot, pal, but what about the car? Dougie says, well, I happen to be a student of the automotive field and, you know, producer of NPR's Car Talk and what, et cetera. And I did notice that it was
red.
89 Corolla. It was midnight blue. The engine was running. I noticed it had mass plates and there was a dent in the trunk.
Hmm.
The officer says, our people will get back to you.
Yeah.
Weeks go by. Dougie, of course, doesn't come to work because now he has no clothes. He really can't come to work. The police finally call him and say they have the car and two suspects. He goes down to headquarters. He looks at the two guys, but he doesn't recognize them because he doesn't pay attention to those kinds of things. And moreover, he was really looking at the back of their heads. But there's the car, the 89 Corolla, dent in the trunk, midnight blue. And he remembers there's one thing he forgot to tell the police about the car. He walks over to it, looks into the car for just an instant, and he tells the police, that's not the car. These ain't the guys.
Yeah.
What's going on here?
What could he possibly have seen with a glance?
Now, you know, I stated the puzzler. He was behind the car. He saw the car pull away from him. Obviously, he wouldn't have noticed a dent in the trunk.
Yeah.
And he wouldn't have noticed it had mass plates.
Yeah.
But there was something that he did notice when the car pulled away.
Yeah.
That he forgot to tell the police. And when he walked over to the car to look at it at headquarters,
yeah,
he had to actually go and look inside the car. And when he did that, he noticed the car had a manual shift. Because what he had seen when they pulled away was the momentary flash of the reverse lights as the shifter passed from park through reverse and neutral into drive.
Oh.
And with the engine running, if the guy had been sitting there in neutral, he merely would have shifted into first gear and taken off.
Of course.
If he was sitting there with the engine running in reverse, the reverse lights would have been on all the time.
All the time.
If the reverse lights didn't work, then he wouldn't have noticed them blinking. He could only have noticed them blinking if they were working and if the car were in park, and that forced it to be an automatic, which it wasn't.
Wow.
Do we have a winner this week?
Wow, that is good. It just goes to show you how you have to be very careful before you accuse someone.
Exactly right.
Wow.
Well, that was a moral in the story. I didn't mention that.
Yes.
But that was the moral
of the
story.
The moral is be careful.
Be careful.
Because those two guys laid a beating on Dougie that he was not going to forget for such a long time. And, yeah, we do have a winner. It's Byron Ellis from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And for having his answer selected at random from all the correct answers that we got, Byron will get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division, which is at cartalk.com. And with that $26 certificate, he can get a copy of our CD, The Hatchback of Notre Dame, More Car Talk Classics, which is currently topping the publisher's weekly list of audio products worth avoiding.
Yippee!
It's good to be at the top of any list. Doesn't matter what it is.
It hardly matters.
Jerk of the week. Number one.
We're there every week. Anyway, we will have a new mathematical, non-automotive.
It's not mathematical. It's a logic problem.
Well, it's from the series of the the heavy
the balance beam,
the heavy coin series.
Yeah.
Okay, so that will be coming up in the third half of today's show. So stay tuned for that. In the meantime, you can call us and ask us questions, and we can fumble through the answers. The number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, this is Joff from Newark.
Who?
Joff.
Joff.
As in Jeff?
As in Jeff. That's how it's spelled, yes.
Really?
I like Joff better.
I never heard of anyone pronouncing it Joff.
Joffrey.
It was a nickname from when I moved from Michigan to Newark. And
you probably had some teacher who didn't understand how to spell Jeffrey and saw it written and called you Joffrey.
So you spell it J-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y.
I spell it J-E-F-F.
All right.
Oh, like Mutton Joff.
Mutton Joff.
I remember that.
Okay.
Like,
where are you from, Joff?
Newark.
Newark, New Jersey?
No, that would be Newark. I'm from Newark, home of the Fighting Blue Hens here in Delaware.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Newark.
Newark. Yes.
Newark.
Two words?
One word. Spelled just like Newark.
Yeah.
Newark, Delaware.
Yep.
Yeah.
So go ahead, Joff.
Yeah, problem I got is a 1990 Toyota pickup truck. It's got a four-speed manual in it.
Mm-hmm.
Several weeks ago, when I got up to the fourth gear, it seemed like the clutch was slipping or something. I could hear the engine rev, but the speedometer didn't really seem to pick up much speed.
Doesn't look good for you, Joff.
But I figured if it was the clutch, I probably should have noticed it in like first, second, and third gears, too.
No.
No. Not really. Clutch is most prone to slippage
in the highest
gear under the largest load.
Hmm.
The way we test clutches for slipping in the shop and make otherwise good clutches begin to slip when we feel the need to sell someone a new clutch is you put the thing in high gear, the highest gear that it has. You set the handbrake. We pull up to Peter's toolbox, so if anything doesn't work, he loses his toolbox, and you try to drive the car away, giving it as much gas as you want to, almost, and letting the clutch out all the way. And the idea being that if the clutch is sound and the car can't move because the handbrake is on,
mm-hmm.
or you're up against a tree, the engine will shut down. If the engine doesn't shut down, then, in fact, your clutch is gone.
There's the engine turning and the wheels aren't, so what's turning? The clutch is slipping.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense, but it kind of stopped doing it.
Oh, that's possible.
Yeah?
I mean, it's possible
not
because
really.
You haven't really duplicated the conditions.
Okay.
But, I mean, if you try to climb a hill,
mm-hmm.
there aren't any hills in Delaware.
No, that's...
That's the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem.
You could drive around for years with a bad clutch and you wouldn't even know it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, it's time for a new one.
Well, I mean, you can perform this test yourself. Pull it up against a tree, put it in fourth gear, and let the clutch out and give it gas and see if it slips.
But why? Going to take the last little bit of a clutch.
That's what my
there.
Brother
oh, yeah,
said.
Do this right next to the repair shop.
No, because otherwise you won't make it.
A sound clutch will suffer no repercussions from this test.
Because it will stall out.
The engine will stall abruptly. It's like someone just yanked the plug. Bang! It'll shut right down. And a weak clutch, you'll hardly know that the thing was in gear.
Yeah. Mm.
The engine will keep running, and you'll say, "Oh, that's funny. I'm in fourth. Let me see. I'm doing 3,500 RPM. I should be doing about...
The speedometer says 40 miles an hour.
I should be doing about 65 miles an hour, but I'm not moving. How could that be?" And that's how it could be.
But on the other hand, if you don't have any plans to take a trip, say, from Newark to Newark,
mm-hmm.
or anything like of that nature, I would simply forget all about this. You will forget we had this conversation.
Yes.
Joff?
Joff, you are falling into a deep sleep.
You're falling into a deep sleep.
Your eyelids are heavy. From now on, you will be known as Jeff.
When you awaken, you will forget everything we've said here today. You will forget about the clutch.
And I won't get stranded somewhere someday?
Oh, yeah.
Well, you could, but you'll probably have some warning.
Okay.
Every once in a while.
Jeff had the warning.
No.
Jeff, Joff.
Joff?
What the hell is your name? You had the warning, Joff.
But it doesn't matter.
He had the warning.
He doesn't drive that much.
He had the warning.
So what?
He's going to forget all about the conversation because we've instructed him.
What conversation?
But get the clutch replaced. You're going to need it real soon.
Okay.
See you later.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Carrie calling from Boston.
Carrie?
Carrie with a K.
Oh, Carrie.
Yes.
K-E-R-R-Y or
exactly.
I?
Exactly.
Why?
With a Y.
From Boston, Massachusetts?
From Boston, Massachusetts.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Do you actually live in Boston?
I live in the South End in Boston.
Good for you. How's everything in the South End?
It's wonderful. It's getting better every day.
You don't own a car down there in the South End, do you?
You know, I do.
You're crazy. So what's up, Carrie?
Okay. So my husband has a 1986 Honda Civic CRX SI.
Mm.
It's a great car, and we're both not tall people, so it fits us well,
okay.
And it's good for the city.
Yeah.
So anyway, we live in a condo in the South End that came with the parking spot.
Yeah.
And the parking spot is in a private alley in back of the condo, and there's probably like 20 buildings that back up to it, so there's like 30 cars back there that park there.
Yeah.
But the problem is that there's no drainage system in the alley.
Mm.
So over time, this big crater, which we have dubbed the Pit of Despair, has formed, and every time that it rains or it snows, it fills up with water. And just to give you an idea how big it is, the lake is approximately like 3 to 4 CRXs in length and like 1.5 in width. And
no
the
kidding.
Depth, it, when I... This is a problem. When I drive through it,
the depth
water...
is about 2 CRXs.
Exactly. Well, the water comes up to the top of the tires.
Not the top of the tires.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Top of the tires.
Yeah.
So all you can see is an inch of tire?
You can...
Barely, yeah. I mean, it's awful.
Oh, that's a lot of water.
Well, we've had a lot of rain lately.
Yeah. Okay.
So every time I need to go somewhere, I have to drive through it to get out of the parking spot and back in. And so steam is, like, billowing because I'm going through when the engine is hot, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
And I think it's starting to affect the brakes.
Sure.
And the reason that I'm calling and not my husband is that he is actually working for a company in Los Angeles. So the car is my responsibility now.
I thought you were going to say he's got the scuba stuff on and he's out there right now trying to get his lunchbox out of the car.
No, you're a perfect candidate for the Jesus shoes.
Do you think they make tires like that, too?
No, but...
No, but a guy we know invented shoes which enable him to walk on water.
That was Chalk's brother-in-law.
It was Chalk's brother-in-law, yeah. Yeah.
He invented what he called Jesus shoes.
Uh-huh.
And they were like these giant pontoon-type things that you put your feet into, and you could then, a la Jesus, of course, walk on water.
I could use some of those.
Yeah. That way you could park somewhere else.
Exactly. But at least I could walk through the alley, and I can't even do that now.
Well, as the hole gets deeper, you will run the risk of sucking water into the engine, which will kill it.
Yeah.
And it'll be one gulp, and boom, the thing will just stop running.
And I'll be like in the middle of the lake, right?
And you'll be in the middle of the lake. You'll have to stand on the roof, and the helicopters will have to come and rescue you.
Or, unless you have the Jesus shoes.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Well, so what I'm wondering is, you know, signs that I should be looking for. I'm starting to feel it in the brakes, I think. The brakes.
Well, the brakes certainly.
The brakes, they won't care, really, except that they will rust a lot faster.
Yeah.
And for a little while, they won't work if you just drive through and then start driving.
I try and pump it a little bit when I get out to get it going. But
how many people drive through the pit of despair?
Oh, like 30. There's about 30 cars, but a lot of people have those fancy schmancy like sport utility vehicles, and they're just bombing right through it.
Well, how about you talk to them? I mean, if you have trouble organizing this little group, my brother can help you with this.
I knew you were going to ask me.
No, I can't help you with this because I live on the street of despair. My street looks like it was taken right out of Bosnia.
Well, I knew you were going to ask me about organizing the neighbors.
Forget it.
And this is the problem.
Yeah.
You know, there's like 20 buildings that back up into it. So it doesn't mean 20 owners. It means probably like 80 because they're all separate condo units.
Yeah. Oh, so it's like $10 a piece to fix it.
Right. It's cheap. That's not the problem. Mm. The problem is that you have to do it legally. You have to get everyone's agreement on it. And we can't seem to do it.
I don't know why people do it at night.
Well, we've
really
that's
why God
that.
Made darkness, because all the furious things
have to be done on the cover of darkness.
When the cat burglars strike, the middle of the day?
Of course not.
Dead of night.
No, I mean, all you need to do is get yourself a ton or so of pebbles.
Oh, been done.
And drop
it
in there.
You need concrete.
We do need concrete. But you know what? If we don't get our neighbors to agree to it, and there's still no drain, so the water has nowhere to go, it's going to go into the bottom units, and they're going to sue me.
Not if they don't know that you did it. See, that's the advantage of doing this stuff at night.
And you don't think they'll notice if we're, like, putting concrete in the middle of the
lake? No, because they'll be sleeping. The truck comes. The concrete's quiet. It just
quiet,
kind of slides out of the truck. And you go out there with a thing called a screed, which is basically a long 2x4, and one of you on one side and one on the other. And you just kind of level it out, and by the morning, it'll be like concrete.
Better yet.
The thing is, we can probably use the water that's already there in the lake to mix the concrete.
And then you could cover it up with dirt so it doesn't even look like you did anything. It's just that the hole now, instead of being 3 feet deep, is only 3 inches deep.
I mean, if the people that live on that street are relying on a crater to keep their basement apartments from getting inundated, then that's pretty ridiculous.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, that's too bad.
Yeah.
You have to fill it in.
I know.
You got to take it upon yourself. You got to do things unilaterally. You can't rely on democracy.
Okay. Yeah,
because trust me, you will never, ever, ever get the neighbors to agree.
I know.
You do get 99% of them to agree, one of them will be some screwball lawyer who will. Of course there is one. And he will hold out on constitutional grounds, and you'll have to kill them.
And then what will happen is the other people that had agreed to do it will drop out one by one, because why should he benefit if he's not paying? If he's not paying, I'm not paying. If he's not paying, he's not paying. Next thing you know, you're going to end up paying for the whole thing. You could solve the whole problem by just paying for the whole thing right now yourself.
That's true.
I know the guy that's got the truck.
All right, great. I'll get the name from you.
We'll be there tonight.
See you, Carrie.
Thank you.
And I know about this stuff, believe me.
Oh, yes, you do.
Hey, look, before we get to the new puzzler, and I know you can't wait, we have to take a short break.
I have to admit that I've never liked the fact that we take a break during this part of the show. I think it sends the wrong message to the listeners.
Yeah? Well, what message would that be?
Well, but the radio station sounds so much better when we're not talking.
They already know that. We'll be back with more of your calls and a brand new puzzler in just a minute, so don't go away. And even though NPR listeners offer to be sequestered from their radios whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new puzzler.
The new excellent puzzler, I must say.
Well, if you've been listening for a number of years, as we have, you may remember some of the coin puzzlers of yesteryear.
Yeah.
You know.
I remember a few of them.
Yeah, one was
I don't remember the details.
You got 8 coins and you've got a balance scale and how can you figure out with the fewest number of wings which is the heaviest coin. Remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, you got 10 coins and an analytical balance. What does analytical balance do? Like think about it a lot?
I don't understand what they're putting all these coins on here for.
And then, of course, there were the pill puzzles,
and
which
the
were of the same
ilk. There was a string series.
Well, so this we're going back to coins.
String theory.
Imagine that you have in front of you 50 coins. Okay? They all look exactly alike, except one of them is a fake. And because it's a fake, it weighs an ounce more, or some amount more. It doesn't really matter.
A couple of grams.
It weighs a couple of grams more than a real coin. So if you had a balance scale, and you knew which was the bad coin, you would put it on one side of the scale, and you'd put a good coin on the other side, and it would be immediately obvious from this imbalance, which was the phony coin, because it's heavier than...
We know that it's heavier than a real good coin.
All right.
Okay.
So knowing that, you have in front of you 50 coins, one of which is bogus.
Yeah.
And the question is, what is the fewest number of wings on a balanced scale?
Mm-hmm.
That is one in which
a balanced beam.
No, that's what Nadia Comaneci walks on.
Oh, that's a balance, yeah.
Yeah.
A balance scale. You put some of the coins on one side and some of the coins
right.
on the other
and
side.
And you have no weights.
Balance.
You have no weights save for the coins. In other
right.
words, you can only put coins on one side and coins on the other.
Got it.
So the question is, you got 50 coins. One of them is bogus. What's the smallest number of wings you can do to
determine? Part B, how can you do it in 4?
How can you do it in 4, exactly.
I knew it. I could see it coming. How can you do it in 4?
Now, if you're thinking, well, this is not...
Well, I have to say, I've been working on this for a couple of hours now. Well,
10 minutes.
10 minutes.
Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on a postcard or a 35-foot, fully equipped mahogany antique catamaran with full crew and optional wet bar. Has anything come through, Louie?
Have anyone been to the post office this week? I mean, have we got any big deliveries?
Now, we may be shooting too high.
Mahogany antique catamaran.
That's a
nice idea.
When we were asking for dead fish, we got them all.
We got plenty of them.
Anyway, send your answer to Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our Fair City.
Matt 02238. Or, of course, you can email your answer from cartalk.com. If you want to talk to us right now, you can call 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-CAR-TALK or 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Mike from Flushing, Michigan.
Hey, Mike.
Well, Michigan.
That's a charming name.
Yeah, well, there are some jokes about that.
We won't make any.
Gee, I didn't think there was a Flushing anywhere else except in New York.
Nope. There's one just outside of the city of Flint.
Flint?
Yeah.
Oh, Flint and Flushing.
Yeah.
Cool. So what's going on, Mike?
Well, I've got a 94 Dodge Shadow with a V6 and a 5-speed.
Uh-huh.
Gets me where I need to go, and where I need to go is 55 miles each way to work over at the state capitol in Lansing.
Wow.
And... the other night, I was sitting waiting for...
Wait a minute, Lansing is the capital of Michigan?
Yeah.
What is now? Didn't used to be.
No kidding!
it's been the capital for well over 100 years.
Yeah. And no one told me! I didn't know that.
Well, go figure.
Oh, God. Man, you learn so much.
You do.
Being on the radio.
So continue,
now,
Mike.
I'm sorry to interrupt.
Okay,
so you drive
right.
55 miles from Flushing to Lansing every day.
Yeah, and I was sitting in the parking lot of the high school there waiting for my son to get out of sewing practice. Got the light on. I'm listening.
Sewing or swimming?
Huh?
Sewing?
Swimming.
Swimming.
Oh, swimming. Sewing.
Yeah, he's on the swim team. And I'm listening to All Things Considered. I got the dome light on. The engine's running because it's cold here in the winter. Mm. And reading a magazine, and all of a sudden my son opens the door, says, "Dad, get out of the car. It's on fire." So what? Drop the magazine. I look at the hood, and there's smoke rising up out of there. And I look down at the gauges, and my water temperature gauge is pegged. So I shut off the engine. I open up the hood. There's no flames. There's just coolant steaming out of the coolant recovery tank. And I check the radiator hoses, and the hoses seem fine. There don't seem to be any other leaks. And finally, the engine cools off enough that I say, well, you know, I'll chance it. I'll drive home. It's only 7 miles. Mm-hmm. So I drove home, and, you know, there was enough cold air coming past the radiator to keep things under control all the way home.
Yeah.
And when I'm on the expressway going from home to work every day, it's not a problem because, once again, there's enough hot air or enough cold air coming through the radiator to keep things cool.
Mm-hmm.
Well, a couple of days ago, we had a bit of a heat wave. It got up into the 40s. I'm on my way home, and I had to turn the heater way up just to get enough coolant circulating through something to keep the engine temperature down.
So your theory is that the cold weather has been covering up.
Masking
some
the problem.
Lurking little problem here that's...
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, you know, obviously we know that your car wasn't on fire. What your son saw was steam.
Right.
Okay, and too bad it wasn't on fire.
I did some things.
Yeah?
I headed over to I don't want to use that archaic term, junkyard. I went over to the auto salvage dealer.
Yes.
Yes, I heard of them.
And I picked up a new, a used radiator fan.
It's not the fan, I'll tell you that right now.
Well, he knows that because he put it in and it didn't fix it.
That's exactly
Well, I'm telling
the point.
You without knowing that.
Well,
you're on the right track. The fan doesn't run.
Yeah.
But not because the fan is burned out.
What do I do?
Well, the way the fan works on this car is there's a coolant temp sensor, which is constantly monitoring the engine coolant temperature and sending that signal to the computer. Then they use the computer to send a signal to the relay, to send a signal to the fan to turn the fan on. So you could have a problem with the relay, or you could have a problem with the computer, you could have a problem with this coolant temp sensor, or you could have a problem with the wiring, or you could have a problem with the fan. So you've eliminated the fan, you've got four more to go. So my advice would be that you take it someplace and have them look at it because, you know, you could spend a lot of money replacing the rest of the things in the circuit.
Yeah.
You could also need a radiator.
Or a thermostat. But if you drive it and it's okay, and your problem is primarily when you slow down or come to a stop.
No, he was driving on the highway, and it overheated. That's why he had to put the heater on.
No.
Well, the temperature was getting up there.
Yeah.
It overheated before you slowed down.
Well, I was going a little faster than the speed limit, and the engine started to warm up.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you may have an additional problem.
You may have an additional problem. The fact that the fan wasn't working may just be a coincidink.
You may have a stuck thermostat. In fact, if you're willing to try something on your own, which obviously you are.
Oh, of course. Mike is dying to try stuff.
I would try replacing the thermostat.
Okay.
Because that could account for everything.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't fix it, then take it someplace, because you're going to melt the engine otherwise.
Okay.
Good luck, Mike.
Thank you.
See you, Michael.
See you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey,
do you know what time it is?
Time to get down on our hands and knees and beg the IRS for mercy.
No. It's time to play Stump the Chumps. All right, so who we got this week?
This week's Stump Chumper is Kathy from Tualatin, Oregon. Apparently, Kathy called Car Talk a little while ago because her kid was about to enter the Pinewood Derby.
Just in case you were not a Cub Scout or you didn't have a Cub Scout in the family when you were a kid, the Pinewood Derby is some kind of a... They give each kid a little block of wood, and they say, make this into a car. And everyone has to use the same size block of wood and the official wheels, I guess.
You get four plastic wheels.
Four plastic wheels. They charge you
nails.
$500. This little thing, they have to be official. And that's it. A couple of nails. You make a car, and then it rolls down a track.
And the kid is supposed to design and build this little wooden car, and it rolls down the track, and races against the other kids' cars. It's pretty simple.
Yeah, I mean, the kids are supposed to be creative, inventive. They're supposed to accomplish something on their own, you know.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to work. Anyway. Uh-oh, another flashback.
Here, have some chewable Clorazine.
Well, and of course, my son was involved totally in the whole process.
Well, I was involved in the Pinewood Derby thing for many years, having seen two boys through Cub Scouts. I was disappointed, I guess, that the parents got involved in it to the extent that they did. After all, it's designed so that the kids can learn.
Oh, get serious. Get a grip.
Right. I mean, you see this six-year-old kid with a belt sander?
Now, in our ever-increasing quest as concerned parents.
Concerned about winning parents.
Concerned about...
to beat the living, you know what, out of all those other naughty little second-grade boys.
We're going to kick some butt here, boys.
We're kicking some Pinewood butt.
That's the end.
Okay, so Kathy wanted to know, where on this block of wood should you place the extra weights that you're allowed to use to get the maximum advantage for her kid's little vehicle?
If I knew that, my kid might still be speaking to me today. What? I don't even know what we told her. Do you remember?
I don't know. We told her it didn't matter, or at least if it did matter, we had no idea why it mattered.
It had to matter. It had to matter. It had to do with momentum and kinetic energy. I remember discussing formulas. 1/2 MV squared.
Oh, MV this. Kathy, are you there?
I'm here.
Is it true, Kathy, that no one from our staff, National Public Radio, or the Cub Scout Internal Affairs Division has threatened to egg your house based on any remarks you may or may not make on this show today? Is that true?
I saw some suspicious vehicles driving by slowly last night.
Yeah.
It turned out to be another second grader who was mad.
Yeah, I bet.
He was spying on you.
Well, did you win? Did you win the race? Was our advice any good?
Well. Advice?
Advice.
Is that what that was?
We didn't give you any advice.
We did not win, but my son's car came in fourth in his grade level.
Oh. Out of five kids?
No, out of five. There were probably about 60 cars total in the whole race. So.
And he came in fourth?
In his age level. But his best friend came in third overall.
Really?
And it's still not settled because his car was weighted in the back and his best friend's car was weighted in the middle.
Wow.
So we don't know the magic answer. But what seemed to have been more important, well, first of all, I have to tell you, I was thinking of you guys as the cars which were underweight rolled slowly to a stop to peals of Cub Scout laughter before they crossed the finish line.
Well, I think I will stand by
you
my position.
You said that the weight didn't matter.
Theoretical sense, the weight matters not. In an ideal world, but the reason the weight matters, and I think I made this point pretty clear, was that the purpose of the weight is to keep the wheels rolling on the track and not sliding. And the more weight you have, more you're apt to keep the wheels in point-for-point contact with the track, which would make the car go straight.
Well,
it obviously give you the smallest amount of friction.
And your friction has nothing to do with kinetic energy?
Squatsky. Absolutely squatsky.
Well, I have here, I mean, I can't tell you how many letters we got on this subject.
Well,
Kathy,
if they don't agree with me, then they're 100% wrong.
I have here. I'll send you. Are you going to be in this next year?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Well,
that's your penalty for losing.
I have here a couple of things which I will send to you. One is called On the Placement of Weight in a Pinewood Derby Car by Jed Ludlow of Salt Lake City, Utah. He's got diagrams, equations. I mean, it's incredible. But, I mean, if you want, I will put a pile of this junk together and send it to you.
Oh, heck yeah. We'll
and
you
will die to get rid of it.
Series till fifth grade.
Yeah, did you send us pictures of your son's car?
So, yeah. He does have a happy smile on his face, which was the bottom line of the whole thing.
That's all that matters.
And he did get a little segment with a picture of a car.
That's good. And as long as he understands the basic premise here that you cheat
right.
as much
now,
as you can, as
thing,
long as you win, that's what's important.
Well, actually, I read an article in Boy's Life.
Yeah.
This one dad wrote in and said, you know what we did this year? We didn't give out prizes. We just lined them up and let them rip. And as soon as they got to the finish line, they got to go back and stand in line to go down again.
Great.
And he said the boys were so happy.
Sure.
Well, you know, it is interesting. The kids may have recognized which of the cars overall was the fastest, but they probably had a hell of a lot more fun just letting them go down the...
That's what they want. They want to see them go down the track.
And do it over and over again until somebody gets sick or gets hurt.
Exactly.
And then you go home. All right, Billy got hurt. Time to go home. Kathy, call us next year, but call us early.
Yeah.
Don't call us like a week before the thing. We need time to really research this and build some cars and test them in our facility.
Well, there we go. Maybe I could build like 10 or 12 based on these design papers, and then we could, you know, run a few down the track.
Sure.
And
stay in touch,
happens.
And we will cheat your kid to victory no matter what it takes.
That's it. You got to let them learn the lessons of life.
Right.
Yeah. Cheat at all costs.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Thanks a lot for calling
back. Keep up that good role model work, Kathy. We love you.
Thanks again.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
If you hear someone on the show that you'd like us to bring back on Stump the Chumps, email us your suggestion from cartalk.com.
Well, it's happened again. You've wasted another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are David the Cavs of Belleville Green, Carly High Voltage Nix, and Catherine Frau Blooper, Penelosa. Our web blackie is Doug the Old Gray Mare, assisted by Connie Britchford. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. Our theme music is by David Dog Grisman, and our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the D.C. green tea, kimchi, roti, yakchi, sweet pea, chablis, warm brie, confit, fat-free Grand Prix, is John Bugsy Lawler.
What? Could you repeat that?
Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin of Error. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our director of new product repair is Warren T. Myfoot. Our audience estimator is Adam Illion. Our shop foreman is Luke Busy. Our pseudonym consultant is Norm DePlume. Our dermatologist for teenagers is Don Pickett. Our conflict resolution specialist is Yvonne, a piece of me. Tom's personal hygiene coach is Haseem Benizi. The manager of the Car Talk listener rebate program is Wendy Pigsfly. Our staff tax preparer is Lionel Little. Our emergency room physician is Henrietta Bad Clam. Our divorce attorney is Carmine Not Yours. Our Russian chauffeur is Beekoff and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester is, of course, Mike Easter. Our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheadman, Howe is Louis Dewey, known to the James Taylor imitators in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And above all, don't drive like my brother.
And secondly, above all, don't drive like my brother.
We'll be back next week. Bye-bye. You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1309, download classic Car Talk episodes, or check out our 25th anniversary swag all over at cartalk.com.
Also this week at cartalk.com, something gets less stinky, less dirty, and a whole lot more socially acceptable.
Mon Dieu, you're taking a shower?
No, I'm talking about the new clean diesel fuel.
Ah.
Learn all about it all week at cartalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though Carl Castle wonders if that job-selling aluminum siding is still available, whenever he hears us say it, this is NPR.